I think he's more of like a fan favorite, gritty fill-in. The comp I would put on him is more like a Brock Holt type of player where, you know, maybe he gets hot for a month or two and makes an all-star team out of nowhere like Holt did.
Here it is, Baseball America hot sheet right after the winter meetings, and still more trades trickling in over the weekend too. Scotty Brun and Baseball America's JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce. Good to see you both. Very excited to see both of you because of the prospect return packages that we're about to go over. So I'm going to let Jeff lead the way today on First Move. I think that the core four for the Red Sox, the top four prospects in their system, has probably been one of the most talked about topics on this show over the past year, Jeff. So it is now a core three. Let's go over the Garrett Crochet return package for the Chicago White Sox. What do White Sox fans have to look forward to with these four?
Yeah, and I think, you know, even beyond Teal, we haven't seen Braden Montgomery yet on a professional baseball field, but an outstanding college player, was very good for 2 years as a two-way player at Stanford, you know, concentrated as a position player at Texas A&M, was one of the best power and bat-to-ball combinations in the draft, the switch hitter. There's not many switch-hitting power hitters with, you know, 80 potential arms in the outfield, and Montgomery is one of those guys. I think if you really want to get super excited about the upside, I think Montgomery may have as much upside as Teal in this deal. Teal on the other side, probably somebody who can step in as at least a platoon catcher, I would say, this year and next year, with eyes toward, you know, an everyday big league catcher with above average offense, good plate approach, good plate discipline, knows how to put the bat in the ball, probably average power when it's all said and done, but he's also a total gamer. I think if you watch this guy over the course of, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 games, just see all the little things that he does really well and how hard he plays the game. It's really hard-nosed sort of approach. And then Chase Mydroth, which I think from an analytical perspective has kind of been anybody that's doing sort of, you know, Marcel models or whatever online for fantasy baseball prospects. It seems like Mydroth has been a hot name for a couple of years, one of the better hit tools in the Red Sox system over the last 2 years, hit for a really high average at AAA, seemingly a couple years out of the draft. Great approach. Not a lot of power, not a lot of defensive ability, but he is versatile defensively. So it's a pretty interesting return overall. And then you get Wilkerman Gonzalez, who really good stuff, not a lot of strikes. You really don't necessarily know where the ball is going when it leaves his hand, but a guy that does have upper minors experience and, you know, the type of stuff that could potentially end up in a bullpen if he doesn't clean up the strike throwing at all.
I love this trade for the Red Sox, though. And I say that because not because Jeff just went through it. Teal and Montgomery, if Montgomery had been healthy, you know, post-draft, we might be talking about him right on that same level as Kyle Teal. Obviously got injured in the NCAA postseason, so we're having to wait till 2025 to see what he can do, again, on a pro field. But those are really good prospects. This should hurt. If you're acquiring someone of the talent of a Garrett Crochet, it should take a little bit of pain in it. But these are guys, when you look at this Red Sox farm system, this is what the work's been for, is the way I would put it, which is it was the core four. But of that four, I would say that you have Anthony and Campbell at one tier. You have Meyer just a little bit below them. And then you had Teal kind of with Montgomery as close to probably that tier on, you know, him on that tier as Teal is to the top tier there. So they managed to acquire a guy who really kind of transforms their rotation and should transform it for several years to come. And they did it without giving away their best prospects. And I don't think logically this should be the last move that we see from the Red Sox. They still have a little bit of a surplus in the outfield. They still kind of need a couple of other things, I would say, if they're really going to contend in 2025. And hey, if you're going to make a trade for Garrett Crochet, you're trying to contend in 2025. They should. They're the Red Sox. But I just look at this overall and say, if you're Boston, you managed to do this trade and hold on to Anthony, hold on to Campbell, hold on to Meyer. You still got a very good young core of close to the big league talent to join with what was an improving big league club. Now the question becomes, okay, what's the next move or the next couple of moves that Boston makes?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big takeaways for me is they really weren't able to touch, you know, they didn't have to touch the sort of highest rated prospects in that system. When you look at Roman Anthony, who we heard was just a non-negotiable in trade talks, the same with Christian Campbell. They still have Marcelo Meyer, who, you know, they have some redundancy in that infield. They've been looking for some veteran infield help as well. I think when you look at that, Red Sox not only had the trade that went down, they also had additional pieces to kind of push it over the edge if they liked a different sort of style of package. That's how deep the top of the system is. But really, 1 through 40 is really deep in this organization right now. They have a lot of variety of prospects, which I think is one of the reasons that you look at them right now, like JJ said, you know, they didn't have to spend a whole lot of money. They didn't have to take on a bad contract. They were able to trade away prospects and not move their top three and still have that ability to go out and make another big move if they want to, with some pieces on the major league roster, like Willy Abreu, for example, who, or David Hamilton, who were, had good seasons last year, that looks sort of like they might be on the outside looking in terms of full-time playing time over the next 2 to 3 year window.
Yeah, guys, this is exactly why you build up the way that the Red Sox did. The Red Sox fan base has gone through some pain now. There's been a lot of last place finishes, right? There was a rebuild. It's not the same scrap it all down, tank forever, but it essentially was a rebuild. They were not competitive for a good chunk of time just now in the past decade in the American League East. Obviously, there were a few shiny moments, but there were many down moments. And they've gotten to this point here where we're talking about them consistently in the farm system that they have, so that you can get a number one like starter for the cost of less than a number five starter on the free agent market. This is a dream for the owner, John Henry, who doesn't want to invest tons of money into starters at the top of the rotation at, you know, a 30 something age range, right? 31, 32. Like, he doesn't want to do the max free deal if he doesn't have to. So this is a good answer. Question for you on the prospect side, JJ, I'll start with you. Do teams look at catching prospects a little bit differently? And I'm going to generalize. Obviously, you're diving into this on a daily basis. A lot of high-level catching prospects either don't work out or they just don't fulfill the bat potential that we thought they would get to. So does that, you know, maybe make teams a little bit more prone to saying, okay, here's the four we have. We're most comfortable with this guy just based on the history of how catching prospects develop.
Catching prospects are dangerous, but part of the reason they're dangerous is because I would say that there's almost a 1.25 or a 1.5 value placed on a catching prospect because it's so hard to find catching. Like, we're looking at it right now, right? Like, we're looking at what the Kyle Higashioka's, what basically second tier catchers are drawing on the free agent market. Look at what, you know, we're seeing. We're really almost out of them on the free agent market at this point right now as well. When you see stuff like that, the thing I've had front office officials tell me is like, if you look at a catcher and you said you were going to do a prospect challenge trade, straight prospect for prospect, the catcher that you would trade in a prospect trade, you would get a much higher tiered prospect at another position in return, because they're just kind of viewed by a lot of teams differently. Now, when you hit on it, like, you see what the Brewers did, hey, we'll get involved in that trade, and can we pick up Contreras? We got Asturi Ruiz over here. When you hit on it, it can be game changing because it's so hard to find an impact catcher. But I would say, yeah, there's absolutely risk. And the interesting thing about this is I would say that even with the White Sox here, you could say that they're trying to mitigate that risk because they have Corey Lee, who, you know, there's still a lot of questions with him about whether he's going to be an everyday catcher. I think there's a lot of skepticism there, but there's a chance, who they acquired in a trade with the Astros. They've got Edgar Cuero, who is pretty close to big league ready, who they got in a trade, and now they have Teal, who they got in a trade. So they're kind of throwing numbers at it that, you know, again, you are paying a premium when you get a catcher. So I would, you know, be interested what Jeff thinks, but to me, that's kind of some of the risk that's factored into this is, hey, there just aren't 30 good catchers out there. There really aren't 30 catchers who can provide offense and defense. So the premium, you're facing an upcharge that you wouldn't be facing if you're looking at an outfielder, a first baseman, or even a middle infielder.
Yeah, and I'll keep it simple. I think that, you know, catchers that can hit are worth their weight in gold. So if you could hit on one of those, it just changes your lineup. It changes the dynamic of your team, especially if they have sort of all the intangibles around handling the pitching staff and, you know, all the things that we demand of catchers besides just even the catch and throw stuff now with you know, more advanced blocking metrics, and certainly, you know, more advanced metrics in terms of receiving and you know, stealing strikes and framing and all that sort of stuff. So I think with someone like Teal, who is well-rounded, who is athletic, you know, has a good body, not a bad history in terms of health, there is probably a premium placed on him versus, you know, other positional prospects that are probably similarly ranked.
Let's bring in this fan question. I just usually, if I can't pronounce it, go with the first few letters. Ace sounds good to me. Who have the most wealthy farm system after Cubs and Red Sox trades? Okay, well, that actually brings us to the Cubs and the Astros swinging a deal that is just a shocker when you look back a few weeks ago at where the Astros were at, and really even over the past few years with the way that they were talking about how they wanted to keep Kyle Tucker, and then it became pretty evident that wasn't going to be the case. So let's start with Houston, and then we will answer that question and go over where the Cubs are at and what other farm systems are up there. But JJ, what did you think of the return package for the Astros to get someone like Paredes, who can obviously plug in right away at first or third, Hayden Wesneski, and then of course the prize of the return in Cam Smith?
I see what the Astros are doing here. I am generally inclined to prefer if you get the star. Like, Paredes has been now traded twice in the span of 7 months for a reason. He's good. He's a good, solid regular, but he's not a star. You know, the Cam Smith, first round pick, good debut. We're hopeful, but we'll see if he's a star. I can tell you Kyle Tucker's a star. I can tell you, obviously, it's a one-year rental. We'll see if the Cubs can keep him long-term. But Kyle Tucker's a star. And if I can get a star, this, to me, this transforms the Cubs, helps kind of take them to another level. Whereas with the Astros, the way I would put it with them is that Houston's hoping to kind of maybe be a little bit lesser in 2025, but maybe try to stretch the window a little bit. Give me the star.
Yeah, and I think you can kind of look at this twofold as well. Like, as an Astros fan, you know, I cover this team, but as an Astros fan, you're probably really disappointed. It looks like Bregman might be, you know, on his way out. Correa wasn't re-signed. You know, now Kyle Tucker has been traded. You know, certainly the part that we don't know as reporters or fans or folks that follow the game, we don't know what was going on in the inner workings of those negotiations. If Tucker 100% was, I'm leaving, I'm testing free agency, there's no amount of money that you can throw at me after looking at that Juan Soto deal where I'm going to sign a contract for anything under $500 million or whatever the number might be. And I think you look at age, you look at the production, I think you can look at, you know, then all-around standpoint, he's not the hitter that Soto is, but from an all-around standpoint, maybe a better all-around player than Soto. And there's an opportunity for him to go into free agency and just, I mean, absolutely, you know, get a humongous amount of money that's just generational wealth and life-changing. So I think that might be what was going on here. In terms of the return for a one-year rental, it's a good deal. I think, you know, you have a couple years left of control on Paredes. He has a swing that is tailor-made for the Crawford boxes there in Houston. So he probably will put up good numbers. You have some question about who's going to end up playing third base for you in the coming years, as it looks like Bregman is probably on his way out. And then you add what I view as a top 50 prospect in Cam Smith, someone who's made tremendous gains from a hit tool perspective in really just a couple years of college ball. You know, as a swing and miss guy, as a freshman, came here on the Cape, worked with Tino Martinez as the hitting coach in Hyannis, and just really took off. And those gains continue to tick up in the spring and then in the summer in pro ball. Shot up to Double A, I think could be a fast mover, is actually a really good athlete. He's not a great defender, but he's a good enough athlete with a strong enough arm that maybe he ends up in a corner outfield spot long term. He's going to be the number one Astros prospect once we revamp this list, you know, after the top 30s are done. He just missed the cutoff in the handbook, so he's not an Astro in the handbook. He's a Cub still in the handbook, but he is going to replace Melton as the number one prospect in the Astros system.
Just like a manager needs to plan to get that perfect matchup in the late innings of a game, you need to have a strategy to protect you and your family's future. That's why long before they ever sponsored the Baseball America podcast, I used SelectQuote when I needed to find life insurance. It was fast, it was easy, and it gave me peace of mind that I was getting the right policy at the best price possible. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers find over $700 billion of coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that may cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work for carriers to get you same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you may think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Get the right insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/BA. Go to SelectQuote.com/BA today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/BA. When you're hiring, it feels amazing to finally close out a job search. But what if you could get rid of the search and just match? You can with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Indeed is the easy choice when we need to make a hire at Baseball America. It provides excellent tools to help get our job out in front of qualified candidates, and it helps me keep me organized throughout the hiring process. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And just to answer the fan question here, the chat question on the back end of it, some other standout farm systems as we're talking about what Boston did, what Chicago did. Baltimore, of course, is a farm system we talk about all the time. The Orioles still have plenty of prospects, and you can make the case they're still prospect hugging a little bit at the moment and even draft pick hugging. But I'm going to take us to another team that I think's continuing to climb the charts. JJ, the Tampa Bay Rays. Push away Jeffrey Springs because he's too expensive. I mean, he's making more than anyone else on the team besides Brandon Lau, who's matched with him. So they trade him over to Oakland, or I keep calling him Oakland, the A's, the ATHs. They get Jeffrey Springs along with Jacob Lopez, and then Joe Boyle, Will Simpson, Jacob Waters, and what I call a first-round pick because it's in the 30s, right? I mean, for fans to understand, pretty close to a first-round pick. It'll be somewhere in the back half of the 30s for Tampa Bay. I mean, they're continuing to make a push with not just quality, but a lot of quantity now in that farm system, right?
Yeah. I mean, you look at this, I love it for the A's from just the standpoint of adding big league talent for a team that needs more big league talent. Yay. And they're just, it just made really a matter of kind of being willing to float the contract. Great. From the Rays perspective, though, obviously the pick I think is important. Joe Boyle is a nice kind of, you know, toy for the pitching development to play with, see if they can help him throw more strikes. But the other thing I would note here is the Rays kind of now have a whole lot of starting pitchers and a lot of those who didn't have options. This kind of opens up some flexibility for them as well, which they kind of needed now. They got McClanahan back to join what was already a pretty deep rotation. Now that all these guys are back, they needed a little bit more flexibility, I think, as well.
All right, so let's finish with the Yankees-Brewers exchange, and that included Devin Williams going to the Yanks. We covered that plenty on Foul Territory last week, so you can go check out the Foul Territory YouTube channel. We also talked about Nestor Cortez. This show is for covering the prospect side, which is Caleb Durbin. He's not a big leaguer yet. He should crack the bigs this year coming off a strong Arizona Fall League. JJ, I am seeing scouting reports all over the map. This happens every once in a while where you look at a player who's got a certain skill set that is fun to watch. And I've seen Dustin Pedroia comps. I've seen John Birdie comps. There is a massive, massive gap between those two talents that we're talking about. So what do you see?
I would say that of any prospect, we don't have Caleb Durbin. We did not have Caleb Durbin in our top 10 Yankees prospects. And I got to be honest, it's not a great Yankees top 10. No non-top 10 prospect probably has a higher Q rating, to use a TV term, than Caleb Durbin. I think every fan knows who he is. I think it's been used 1,000 times that he led the AFL in stolen bases this year, which credit to him. But we were talking in this previous trade about Chase Medroff being part of that trade. I don't see Chase Medroff and Caleb Durbin as being all that different. I don't think that Caleb Durbin is, I think he's more of a utility player. He's got some solid skills, but there's not a lot of pop in the bat. I don't think there's a lot of pop to come. So I would lean Birdie more than Pedroia, because one of the things about Pedroia swung the bat really hard, and he knew how to connect and how to kind of create power out of a small package. I think Durbin kind of fits more in that, you know, that useful gets on base type player, but not, I mean, I don't think that this is a long-term regular, and I don't think he's a star.
Jeff, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I saw him in the Arizona Fall League. You know, good base runner, good utility type of player. I think he's more of like a fan favorite, gritty fill-in. The comp I would put on him is more like a Brock Holt type of player, where, you know, maybe he gets hot for a month or two and makes an all-star team out of nowhere like Holt did. But I think it's more going to be a guy that sees like 250 to 300 plate appearances, plays all over the infield, can probably fill in the outfield if you need him to, steal a base, give you a good at bat. Good bench player. I don't think he's a full-time regular.
Yeah, I saw him plugged in very frequently to projected rosters for the Yankees at second base. And I was like, are we sure? Are we sure that's the Yankee style of player? It is not the Yankee style of player if you know their front office and how they operate.
But you have to put someone there when you don't have anyone. Someone has to go in that box. They don't just leave it blank even before all the free agent moves are made. So it worked out very well for the Yankees, because they can keep saying, hey, Caleb Durbin is our planned starter at second base. Privately, if we end up with Caleb Durbin as our second baseman, things have gone poorly because we have other plans.
Exactly. That's a good call. Yeah, I mean, I would even put, where's this Waldo Cabrera? I mean, he's been there for a while. I know he's become more of a utility guy, but he's got higher upside. I know they lost Gleyber Torres, so that's the whole deal here. But that's a good point by Hirsch. The Yankees do hype their prospects. And I think it's not just the Yankees. I just think certain teams get more attention, and so you learn more about that player based on the media coverage.
There's a lot more fans who care about Yankees prospects, let's just be honest, than care about Marlins prospects. Whether the Marlins have a better farm system at that moment or not, there are a lot more fans who are living and dying with how Yankees prospects are doing. So obviously they are going to get kind of more name recognition for reasons like that.
Yep. Good call. Jeff, good to see you as always. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll catch you next week. And JJ, let's talk draft lottery for a moment. So we're going to bring in BA's Carlos Collazo, and also a good time to let everyone know to check out baseballamerica.com, please, and also get yourself a subscription for the holidays, or hand one out as well. All right, so let's bring in Carlos for the next seg here. Here we go. Carlos, good to see you again. We talked before the draft lottery. Now we talk after the draft lottery. Your overall thoughts on what you saw go down. I mean, I love the lottery. I just want to first off let everyone know for the millionth time. I love seeing some teams just climb through, and then some teams that have been bad for a while just get smacked, because that's what this is for. You can't just tank your way to top picks anymore.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I mean, it wasn't quite as crazy as last year when you have Cleveland and Cincinnati jump to 1-2. Pretty typical pick at the top with the Nationals. They've actually got pretty lucky in the lottery since they've been in it. Last year, they weren't eligible, but they've picked 2. Now they're picking 1. Obviously, the massive winners of this year's lottery are the Mariners, going from 17th in the old system with about a 0.5% chance to get the number one pick. They don't go all the way to number one, but they jump from 17 to 3 overall. That's obviously a great spot to be picking in any draft. And as always, we're going to talk about in baseball's draft, the slot value that you're getting with that pick adds as much value as the pick itself. The Mariners also have the benefit of picking 3rd in the supplemental first round. We don't know exactly where that pick is going to be yet, but it's going to come with a couple more $1 million of slot value and a chance to add another high upside pick. I mean, we had the Mariners top 10 drop on the site today. They've got a phenomenal farm system. I think it's deep. It's filled with a lot of talented young hitters, up the middle types. they're going to have more chances to add this year after going from 17-3. They'll be a lot of fun to watch. They're a team with clear preferences and in kind of their draft philosophy over the years. And they're going to be picking in a range where they're going to have access to a pretty elite talent, you would assume, unless this draft class is just terrible, which right now we think it looks like a pretty good draft class.
Yeah. The other thing I would just add to that, like I get to be the pool reporter and so I'm watching the ping pong balls and come up and all that. And I enjoy like when it gets a little bit chaotic, and that Mariners pick truly was chaotic because as unlikely as they were, when that last ping pong ball came up, the Diamondbacks had as much chance of winning it as any of the teams at the top of the draft lottery, which is just kind of crazy. And so to see a team like Seattle, I think that this is beneficial, that the way I kept talking about it at the winter meetings is the White Sox just had an all-time horrid season and it was bad. But we also now know this wasn't that they were tanking. This wasn't that we were, you know, that this was a situation where they were, it's bad for baseball that they were this bad intentionally. They weren't. They didn't get a pick out of doing this. They were just bad. They didn't mean to be this bad. They were just horrible. And so that's better for baseball than us spending the entire offseason talking about how the White Sox made a mockery of the game because they intentionally won, you know, just barely beat the Mets record, you know, and ended up with the number one pick. They didn't get the number one pick. They picked 10.
Yeah, I love that.
No, and I was going to say, if you're a White Sox fan, would you rather have this system where you're picking 10th and kind of in your results, JJ, you see they would have been sixth overall if they actually were in the lottery? I think you might feel better knowing the whole year you're not getting one versus going into the system thinking you've got the best odds and then you go all the way down to six. In some ways, they kind of come out and you can feel you get a little bit of cold comfort for the White Sox.
They won by losing, I would say, because if they hadn't had this happen, they would have picked sixth. And that would have been a disappointment because not only would they have picked sixth, they would have been locked out of having a chance at the number one pick next year by picking sixth. We saw this. We've seen this in recent years with the A's. The A's were locked out this year. The A's are a winner of this draft to me because we knew they were locked out. They wouldn't have picked in the top six. Their ping pong balls never came up. So instead of picking, you know, seventh, eighth, if they would have been in a situation with, if they had been part of the draft lottery, they get to reset. They're going to be better next year, probably. I mean, they're trying now, it looks like a little bit, but still they've got a better shot at picking 1-1 next year in a year that they've reset and they'll be eligible again.
And also, before we get to losers on the draft lottery for this year, fans should all feel like winners in a case like this, like White Sox fans, for example. These draft lottery rules are in place so that we don't have these massive, massive 6, 7, 8 year tanks. Your team is just absolute trash. You lose a generation of fans. No money is spent. Owners pocket it. They wait for every first overall pick to get lined up their way. It is just crap. It's anti-competitive. So this stuff is being put in place so that your team is forced to be more active quicker because they can't just fall back on the draft like this. So technically, the White Sox should be spending on one-year rentals so they can, I always use the example, be like the Royals and turn an Aroldis Chapman into a Cole Reagans. They're not doing that right now, but this at least forces the hand. Otherwise, they're just going to be bad for an even longer period of time. You can't be lazy, not as lazy as an owner these days. So anyway, let's get to the losers. Carlos, who's up?
Yeah, I think the most obvious loser from this is the Marlins. I mean, they enter with the best odds along with the Rockies, 22.5%. to have the first overall pick. Not only do they not get in the lottery at all, they're picking seventh. So you don't get one, you don't get two, you don't get three. You don't even slide in the second half of the top six lottery picks. So I think that's pretty unfortunate. I mean, the Marlins do have a really exciting prospect at the top of their system in Thomas White, who had an exceptional year. He's one of the very best left-handed pitching prospects in the game at this stage. But I think the system falls off pretty quickly after him. They're a team that has done a really nice job with arms. It would have been great if they had an opportunity to add an elite bat in the first five picks in this year's draft. They're not going to be able to do that now. They're in the midst of a rebuild. They had obviously had a pretty sneaky 2023 season. They need to add more prospects. They've added a lot this year. And I think they would have loved an opportunity to have, I mean, just a top three pick would have felt nice. But I think if you're a Marlins fan, it does have to sting going from best odds to outside of the lottery entirely.
this seems almost weird to say, but I'm going to say the Diamondbacks, because as weird as it is for a team that was in the World Series 2 years ago and really had two ping pong balls out of 1,001. So a, you know, two in 1,001, basically a one in 500 shot of a lottery pick. But when that third pick came up, they had a one in eight shot with the last ping pong ball to go. So they came that close. The Mariners pulled it off, but they came that close. I did want to just follow up, though, what Scott said. I think is a really good point. When you have this now, the lottery, when you have this, I look at the White Sox. I don't have a problem with the White Sox trading Garrett Crochet. For Garrett Crochet's sake, I'm glad that they trade Garrett Crochet so he can go and pitch for a contender this year. But that being said, this is a team that was well below average, well below replacement level in some cases at a lot of different positions last year. And they don't have this AAA, AA roster of guys who are like, well, we don't want to block any of these guys because all these guys are ready to go and we need to figure out who's going to be those guys. To what Scott said, the White Sox are a team right now who should be, and again, maybe they will because there's still time to shop at the bargain aisle. That's kind of arrives more in January and February. But they should be shopping at the bargain aisle over and over, signing one-year deals to guys where it's like, look, we can give you a major league contract when no one else is. We can give you a little bit more money when someone else is. And then hoping to hit on several of those who then can be turned into something. And by the way, regression to the mean is going to get them to 50 wins, but there's no joy in getting to 50 wins. Make the team a little bit more enjoyable to watch. Maybe try to get to 60 wins. I mean, that sounds crazy, but that would be an almost 20-win improvement to go to 60. To go to 60 and 102 would be like 62 and 100 would be like, man, we showed a massive progress this year. And there's no real downside to that because you're still going to have top odds among the top odds of winning the lottery.
That's right. So obviously we'll get into the draft going into next year like we always do on the show and, of course, on a much larger scale on Baseball America. So get yourself a subscription. Also check out mock drafts flowing through. Carlos already thinking about it. 2025 mock draft includes Ethan Holliday at the top. We went over it a little bit last week. So if you want to check out last week's episode, it definitely still applies. And lastly, for this show's purposes, we've been going over top 10s over the last several weeks. And JJ, tomorrow's the finish line, right?
Well, it's the finish line, and then we're also finishing the prospect handbook this week, which goes to press next Monday. So it's kind of the finish line, and it's the start of the finish line. But yeah, we will have 30 top 10s up by Tuesday of this week. We will roll out top 100 and expand to top 30s with full reports in January. Prospect season is in full effect here at Baseball America.
Yeah, you'll hear all about it on this show. We'll be back next week on Monday, 3:30 Eastern time live. Week after, we'll take a break for the holidays. And we're here for you on Hot Sheet. See you next time.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.